I think one of the things that's stops a lot of people from going on this journey, and one of the things that nearly prevented me from going on this journey is, if you start working on yourself and start healing, you've got to be really accountable. Because while I'm still drinking, I can blame it on that. So now I can't blame it on addiction. What am I going to blame it on? Well, I've got a lot of work to do on myself. I'm trying. So, like, the further along the line you get, there's more accountability, right? So, that was hard. But I just realized that what was killing me was coming from inside of me.
Welcome to the Deeper Awareness Podcast, where we delve into the depths of our inner selves, uncovering authenticity and transformation. Join us for enlightening conversations on breathwork, self-discovery, and the profound journey within. I'm your host, Josh Perry, joined by the delightful Hannah Oxley. Let's begin.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of our Deeper Awareness Podcast. And what I'm calling the finale to our UK series. The last 2 weeks we had on Nick Edgar and his partner, Jess Frost. I want to have them on again, and I want to have them on together because their energy separately was so amazing. I can't imagine how they are together. I would love to make that happen. And so today we have our guest is Josh Conley. Nick and Jess both work for him in his program, Inner You, this amazing program that he's created. That's also how our Josh found him too. I think he found him through other things, but joined his program, Inner You. And he also is announcing the release of his new book. So his journey from as a kid to now is so relatable, and he's just a really down-to-earth person, breathwork facilitator, inspiring mentor. I'm just really excited for our listeners to get a peek into his life, especially any men going through any sort of mental, emotional difficulties. This is a really good listen because, like I said before, very relatable circumstances that he went through growing up, and how he found just connected deeper to himself by doing the inner work that we talk about so frequently on the show. So without further ado, please welcome Josh Conley.
What I'd like to do is share where I found you. So this is before I found breathwork. This is as I was, so I want to say it's about 2 years ago. And so I was, Googling breathwork. I was breathing to different YouTube, Wim Hof audios. And then somehow you shut up. And I don't know if it, I want to say it was Instagram because I'm not big on TikTok. And so I started to sign up for your emotional release calls, and I would lay down and I would breathe, and then I would hold, and then I'd breathe, and I'd hold, and then breathe, and then scream, and crazy shit happened. Like I had one moment where hate left my body, and for about 30 minutes after that call, I sat in a stupor and I didn't know who I was because that hate had left my body. And it was like a piece of my identity had just floated away. And so I had to like just sit there. Like I sat there, and then it started to, I don't know if the integration happened, but I picked myself up and dusted myself off, and then moved on with my day. So it really feels like an honor to have you. It feels like a mentor or a hero, somebody that's really been pivotal in my journey. So I wanted to start off with a big heartfelt thank you for what you do in the world, and that you've really been, impactful and beneficial to me.
Oh man. We're not even 2 minutes in and you've made me speechless. It's not a good start, Josh. No, listen, let me just say, like the way I love the way that you describe the breath work, you know, with the hate leaving your body and stuff like that. And then listen, I'm glad to be here, man, and like to be in your company, having done, you know, one of your breathwork sessions and had an incredible experience for you as well. So, yeah, we're shoulder to shoulder, man. We're shoulder to shoulder. So it's good to be here.
Yeah, I feel that too. So if we can, what we'll do is just have you introduce yourself, however you like to do that for you right now, and then we'll just take us back in time to maybe upbringing, what that looked like, and then we just want to hear your story. So whatever that feels good for you.
Yeah, cool. Sounds good to me. Yeah. So I'll jump straight in, shall I?
Do it.
I'll give you some of the backstory.
Yeah.
Well, look, I think, as I always try and say, and I think it's important to say, is that in some ways I feel like I've lived two childhoods. And that's because up until a certain stage in my life, I had the childhood that I believed I'd had, or the childhood perhaps that I had convinced myself I'd had out of the necessity of not being able to comprehend the difficult experience that I genuinely had. And that, you know, that change didn't happen until I stopped drinking when I was 24 years old. And I think that's when my life really made, you know, like my life really changed dramatically. And that journey of sobriety, of trying to find a way to live without alcohol and drugs, is what really opened me up to realize that actually, far from this sort of idyllic, perfect childhood that I believed that I'd lived, I grew up under difficult circumstances, you know, particularly in my most formative years, you know, those first sort of 9 years. My dad died when I was nine, and he was an alcoholic. And you know, after he died, I sort of lived a much more functional, should we call it functional, life, where my mum had remarried. And by the time I was 12 years old, I'd had all of this difficult stuff, all of this trauma happen to me when I was a child, and now I lived this relatively normal life, and I couldn't understand why I was struggling. And you know, what happened was, is that because in the house that I lived in, it was always very emotionally avoidant, right? So after my dad died, you just didn't talk about it ever. Still don't talk about it within my family. And so, like, I lived a lot of my childhood confused. I now recognize that I'm sort of a highly sensitive person. So I sort of see a lot more than the average person perhaps sees. And so I was confused a lot, you know. I like the way everybody else seemed to present and feel didn't match up to how I felt in the world. And I felt very much like an outsider, despite being very good at making friends. I've always had big social circles, and I guess, like today, you know, now looking back retrospectively, I can see that I'm sort of very introverted, really, but hide behind extrovertism. My way of dealing with being an introvert and feeling like I don't fit in that way is to be really good at being extroverted, you know. So it was a really difficult life for me when I was a child. But I don't even know if I could have vocalized that when I was a child, you know. I just sort of crashed through my life doing whatever I could to survive. And, you know, so that I'm not just doing a whole monologue here for the whole time, but, you know, it's no wonder to me that I found alcohol and drugs when I was like 12 and 13 years old, because they really worked for me. They were like a, you know, the best solution I'd ever found, and carried me through my life for a long time. Alcohol and drugs really carried me, you know. I don't know if I would be here without them, which seems crazy to say as somebody who, you know, at the age of 24, stopped them all and began on this healing journey. So I guess that's quite a long way round of giving you a brief overview of my experience. But I was 24 when everything changed, and yeah, everything I've told you, I discovered retrospectively. I think that's important to say as well, you know.
So I don't know if we speak enough about how troubling confusion can be to a little person.
Look, I think children can survive anything. The reason that, we often hear people say things like children are naturally resilient, right? I don't believe that to be true. I think children are natural born survivors, right? Incredibly adaptable. They will do whatever they need to do in order to survive. I think children are way, 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 way better than adults at dealing with traumatic events, right? However, the key thing that they need is a safe, loving, nurturing, consistent adult who's willing to be in that truth, see that truth, and explain that truth clearly to them.
That's
And
what they're
I
looking for, is the tr
it's
is truth and love.
it, truth and love. Like, that's it. Like, that's it. But I think most, and I believe this to be true. I don't believe this to be an extreme thing to say. I think most adults are incapable of giving children at least one of those things. Mainly truth. I think we are terrified of truth. And so we have this capacity to collectively lie, to co collectively hide from the truth, to collectively tell ourselves a different narrative because it's easier than living the narrative of the truth. And I think we see that play out in society all of the time. But it's particularly damaging when I take myself as a child. Like, I would come down morning after the house being smashed up, and everybody's acting like everything's normal. I'm confused as hell. Like, I'm terrified. Like, I heard what was going on. Like, why? Like, and my mum's just acting like everything's okay. So then I go to school and I've learned that you don't really talk about this stuff. So everyone at school's talking about what they did at the weekend with their parents and everybody seems happy and carefree. And I'm stuck in this turmoil. Now, I believe that if I'd have had at least one, but I think children need more than that, but at least one loving, nurturing adult who was able to step in that morning and say, "This is horrendous and horrific. What's happening to you? It's horrific. This isn't your fault. You must be terrified. That makes perfect sense. When you go to school today, if you can't be in the lesson and you can't sit still, there's nothing wrong with you. I think it's perfectly appropriate that you can't sit still after what you've experienced last night. So if you can't be in the lesson and history isn't really cutting it for you today, or maths isn't really at the forefront of your mind, you've just heard your mum get physically abused all night and you couldn't sleep. I think maths can wait. It's okay. Don't you worry." Yeah. But of course, we don't get that. We get the complete opposite. So I'm not rabbing off too much here, but I think we can take that a step further. I lived in an extreme environment, perhaps, right? Although way more common than people allow themselves to believe. But even if we take my dad's addiction as being extreme, family life is difficult. Parents, if you're lucky enough to have two parents that stay together and stay in love with each other, because by the way, some parents shouldn't stay together, and that's a problem. But if you have even the best will in the world, that's complicated. It's messy. It's difficult. They go through stuff, your parents do. And as a child, highly intuitive, you go through that with them. And yet, all we ever teach children is like fairy tale ideas of family. So the kids go, I was going to school and like reading about these families and seeing, and I'm thinking, like, I must be crazy because my life is nothing like anything I see out of there. And what I've discovered in my adulthood through my own research is that my life was not too dissimilar to most people's. We just all hid from each other.
We all put these masks on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you touched on too how intuitive we are as children. And I saw something recently I've already shared with Josh, but There was a video of a dad driving the car, and he suddenly forgot something landed in his head that he forgot about, and he suddenly had like a little bit of an anxiety attack when his kid's in the back seat saying, "Dad, is something wrong?" Like he might have not made any physical change, but the kid felt the shift in energy. And then when you say, "Oh no, nothing's wrong, like everything's fine," then they start questioning themselves and their own intuition. So in this story, this video, this guy was like, "Actually, no, you're right. I forgot something, and now I'm just a little nervous about this, but everything's gonna be okay." And so then it's building that trust for themselves, their that in, innate knowing inside of them that we do have, like, because my breathwork journey has been kind of waking that part of me up, that part that I trust, that voice inside of me, that intuition, and that lost as a kid.
Yeah, that to reconnect with you. That's you. Like I always use the example of like one of my children, my daughter, she's 7 now, but I remember when she was a little bit younger, I can give an example where she came into the kitchen once and I had an argument with my wife, right? Not a blazing argument. I can't remember what it was, something trivial, but we'd fallen out over it, right? And my daughter walked in and she was like, "Stop it, you two, stop it." And my first reaction is, "Don't be silly. We're all right. There's nothing going on here." And what I do in that second is like, teach my daughter, don't trust your body. Your body's wrong. You're wrong, right? So like you said, in this same scenario, actually in that moment, what I have to say is, you know what? You're right. Me and your mum were just having an argument. Actually, we disagreed about something. That doesn't, it's a great opportunity to be able to say, it doesn't mean I don't love her. It doesn't mean she doesn't love me. We just disagreed. And then we got a little bit angry with each other, like humans do. But how incredible that your body could pick up on that. And I think we all grow up in environments where we're consistently and repeatedly told that our bodies are wrong. Because I'm a parent myself, right? The things that annoy me most about my children is when they expose the parts of myself that I'm hiding from. Right? So what I will do, and even sitting here now, I have to be completely honest. Sometimes I will still want to continue hiding from myself, and so my only option is to make them wrong. You're wrong. I'm fine. Stop it. And so children, as a result of that, grow up consistently having to disconnect from their body because their body's giving them messages that everybody around them is telling them is wrong. So the journey with things like breath work and other somatic things are to come back into my body. So to be able to like be around somebody and think, I don't like the way that I feel when I'm around you. And so I'm not going to be around you. And actually, it doesn't really matter whether that's me or you. Like if it's somebody that I love and I'm getting that, then maybe I want to look at it and reflect and ask why it's there. But if it's somebody I've just met, like maybe I don't need to be around them. Whereas I lived a life where I was like, "Oh, this person makes me feel horrible, but they look nice. They have nice hair and they're dressed well. So I'm an idiot if I don't, I'm not a nice person if I think that they're not nice," which is ridiculous. I need to trust my body and make decisions for me and myself. That's living in my power and my authenticity.
Or once Josh had given the example, was it you? Would you witness it at like a playground or something where like some like stranger came up to a kid and was like, "Here's a lollipop or something," and the mom has to be like, "What do you say? Like, say thank you." Like, even if that stranger made you feel completely uncomfortable, you're taught to be polite and respectful, even if your instincts are like, "I don't trust that person. I don't want to be nice to that person." But then you're just creating that pattern of like, I have to put that mask on. I have to pretend that I'm nice. And you said something too about like disagreements. I've something I'm noticing now is how I fear disagreements. Like I was trained so much to be agreeable to people. So like that, like it's all just in that programming of being a polite, good little girl, good little boy, whatever it is.
You become terrified of conflict, right? And like how I am with my wife's a good example, right? Because I'm like that. I'm terrified of conflict. I'm terrified of saying no. And like I have to be careful I don't push it onto my kids. I use an example. One of my children came home with an invite to a party, a child in her class. She was young at the time, 6 maybe. And she said, "I don't like this person." And I was like, well, My first thought was like, no, we'll just go. She's invited you, so you should go. And then my wife was like, no, you don't have to go. If you don't like her, don't go. And then I was like, oh no, she's right. But even then, I was like, yeah, we'll just tell her that you can't go because we're going to be at your nan's. And then my wife was like, no, you don't have to lie. Just say you're not going. And I was like, yeah, just say you're not going. But even now, as I'm describing it, I can feel my body doesn't like that. My
Right.
body,
I can feel that.
my body wants to be like, no, we have to at least give a lie. And I do that all the time. You know, I get invited to stuff and like, I say to my wife, oh, I've been invited to this thing. I'm going to have to tell him we can't go because we're away. She's like, no, just say no, thank you. And I'm like, oh,
I
God.
know.
You know, it makes my whole body crawl. And that's because of all of this stuff that we talked about, you know?
Right. Well, what as we were talking about before we were recording about how I'm busy like resting my body. Like it's a hard thing to say, but you've gotten to that part, so you know we're healing.
Yeah. And look, I do think that, by the way, I think a lot of this is, I think when I first started noticing this stuff, when I really started working on myself, I thought the goal was to reach a place where my body doesn't go like that when somebody
Right.
asks me, right? I thought I had to reach a place where I could be like my wife and just be like, nope, we're not. And like, listen, I've worked on myself, and there are times when I feel really aligned and I'm like really in my power and everything's fallen into place and I would be able to say no. And then there's other times when I feel like I've done no work on myself whatsoever and I'm a mess just at the very thing. And I'm more comfortable with that today, you know. I find it easier to just take the, you know, have a joke at myself and jest at myself about the fact that I'm like that. Because every time I think I have it all figured out, I fall, you know. So I'd rather just admit I'd never, you know, I'm gonna only ever know very little. And that's all right, you know, I'm aware of it. I know who I am today on the whole. And once I know who I am, I can learn to love myself right there. Because otherwise, I'm doing what I've always done, which is try and be good enough to be lovable. Yeah,
Right.
but I'm just doing self work as hard as I can. You know, if I just do that next course, or if I can go on a deep, if I go on a real deep retreat, you know, like when things are going awry in my life, and I don't know, maybe I'm not communicating with my wife very well, or I'm overworking. Like, instead of going, right, you need to sit down and have a conversation with the people that you care about. You need to take the foot off the gas with work, right? Instead of doing that, I'm like, maybe I need to like climb the Himalayan mountains bare feet or do something. You know what I mean? Like, I go here because I'm trying to find a new way to not have to go and actually look at myself, you know, because it's easy to love myself when I've just done something good. Can I love myself in the moments when I mess up? Because that's what I need to be able to do, because I mess up a lot, you know?
It's seasons, and especially like physical seasons, the winter. This winter, I'm like, I'm loving myself through this winter. Like, cause it's dark. There's like, Josh always laughs at me. There's like no sun. I'm in Boston, and like the sun sets at like 4 o'clock, and it's like, you know, less vitamin D, and it's just, I want to be lazy. And so I'd be so hard on myself at the beginning of the winter. I'm like, oh no, we got to keep working. We got to do this. And all of a sudden I'm like, no, like I can chill. I can love myself still at this part, even though I don't feel like I'm blasting off into some new awareness and new healing and new pattern that I'm trying to figure out inside me. Like, no, I'm okay right here where I am at the moment. It's a season. It's a season within me, and it's respecting the seasons of nature, and it's okay.
And you're human.
We're
You're
human.
just hu you're just human, you know? It's so important to remember this stuff. It really is, I think, anyway.
Is that perfectionism, like it's something that forgets to be healed when we're then we start trying to perfect our healing. It's so it just becomes another vicious cycle of trying to perfect what we're doing. It's like it's just gonna happen the way it's supposed to happen. We're all on the right path, and we'll learn the things we need to learn the way we're doing it. I'm in a mastermind right now, and it's all about it's like we're playing like a video game, and it's just our little avatars, and our lives, the little hearts in the corners, the life gets lost every once in a while, and we just get to restart again. And it's just, why take things so seriously? Why be so hard on ourselves?
And again, it comes back to the two words that we said earlier that children want, right? It's just love and truth. So if, going into a little bit of hibernation through the winter is your truth, and you can love yourself in that moment, then let's do
Right.
it. Let's hibernate and love ourselves, like, what's wrong with that? Why are we always
Absolutely.
why are we always pitching for something over there? It's all, but I think that's part of being human as well, right? Is this belief that happiness exists over there, right? It's just that next rung on the ladder. I just get to that one, I'll be happy. And I don't know, we never get there, but maybe part of being human is that we have to chase a little bit so that we're not sat still. Maybe.
So tell us when you started to go inward. Like, was it breath work first? Was there something else that kind of sparked that chase to find something deeper inside?
It started predominantly when I got sober. So when I stopped drinking, that was like in 2012. I stopped drinking, and the reality is that I thought that that was it. I thought all my problems, if I could just not drink, all my problems would go away, right? And of course, that didn't happen, and I was left with all of the ways that I felt. But then, even worse so, after I stopped drinking, and all the feelings came back, I was then left with some of my behaviors as well. And that was really hard. And I think, by the way, I think one of the things that's stops a lot of people from going on this journey, and one of the things that nearly prevented me from going on this journey is, if you start working on yourself and start healing, you've got to be really accountable. Because while I'm still drinking, I can blame it on that. So now I can't blame it on addiction. What am I going to blame it on? Well, I've got a lot of work to do on myself. I'm trying. So, like, the further along the line you get, there's more accountability, right? So that was hard, but I just realized that what was killing me was coming from inside of me. I realized that the answer wasn't out there anywhere in the world, and nor was the problem. Like, this, it's all an inside job, and so I sort of vowed to myself around, 10, 11 years ago, right at the beginning of this journey, to just continually work on myself. And I did that with mainly like sharing circles and community until I found breath work, which was like, what are we in now? 2024. Maybe like 5 years ago. And very, very quickly, I wanted to train to do it because it sort of changed so much for me. I've always been very good at sort of speaking, which is like great for the work that I do, problematic for somebody who's trying to work on himself, because I know how to talk and to tone my voice and to sound, sounding deep and emotional and all of that, so I can convince anybody that I'm emotionally in it when I ain't feeling a thing sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, so that's changed a lot now because of the breath work, because the breath work brings me into my body. And a bit like you said, Josh, when you did the breath work and hate came out of you, stuff came out of me that I had no idea was in there. And what I love about the breath work, by the way, is that you don't necessarily have to make sense of all of it. Like, some of it just goes out and it's like, it's gone. It's gone. It's been trapped in my body and it's gone. And that's okay. And I think that, you've probably read the book by Bessel van der Kolk, The Body Keeps the Score. The body remembers everything. A lot of the stuff that happened to me, I can't recall it, which means I can talk about it till the cows come home, but I don't remember it in my rational part of my brain. My body remembers it, And how often am I in a completely triggered state and everyone goes, do the work, find out what it is, what's triggered you, why has your nervous system gone crazy, what is it? And I'm like, I have no idea. I have no idea what it is. But what I do know is that when I lay down and breathe, my body knows, and my body looks after me, and my body does what the body needs to do. And I think that, mental health is a very sort of new Western idea of what's going on here. And I think the fact that we separate physical health and mental health in Western culture is just ridiculous. Like, the body doesn't remotely do that. And I think the only reason we do it is so that we can get up in our heads, rationalize stuff, and make sense of it that way, so we never have to feel it. And I think that's common in a lot of the conversations in, the sort of Western idea of what mental health and mental health struggles are. And breathwork's taught me that it's all about my body. It's all about my body and how I relate to it,
Well, it kind of bridges that gap because it calms the mind, gets out of their mind into your body. And yeah, that's one of my favorite things to tell my breathers is just let the breath do the work. You don't have to think about it. You just have to be present and witness.
Yeah, that's the best thing. That's the best thing about breathwork, isn't it? It's like, just do the breath, just breathe, breathe, and let. And then, like, I think over time you build a bit of a relationship with it, and you can like then lay down and think, I'm going to breathe on this, and almost sort of direct your mind there. But it's powerful stuff, man, because it gets me out of the way. You know what I mean? This part of me, my brain, the rational part of me. Let's get that out of the way, because that part of me comes up with some crazy ideas, crazy ideas that get me in trouble. Yeah, my body knows best for sure. I've no doubt about that, and that's why I love the breath work, man. Yeah, I think it's life changing for a lot of people.
What was your first experience like? How did you run into it?
So there's a crazy story behind this, right? So I used to, everybody says, or it's changing a little bit now because breathwork's coming in, but everybody that was doing any kind of self work, it never used to be healing, it was sort of more self-development. It was known as back then self-help. But everybody used to say, I meditate every morning. And I used to close my eyes and breathe in through my nose and out through my mouth, right? And I now know that my nervous system would go mental. Like, people used to go, yeah, it's really hard, but if you sit with it, and I used to sit with it and I'd be like, nah, this is getting worse. Like, and by the way, it's still true for me today. If I do calming breathing in through the nose and then elongate that exhale, if I'm, this is strange. You may be able to tell me, you two, why this is actually, but I don't know. But when I'm in community with other people doing it, I'm comfortable and relaxed. If I sit at home, just like this, shut my eyes, and it's not, it doesn't do me any favors. It doesn't. So what I used to do is, I still do this now, but this is what I used to do when I first started. I'd go in the sauna. So and I would like breathe in, try and meditate when I was in there. And the idea was that I was in there for 20 minutes. I was battling the heat, and that sort of battle against the heat would keep me in there. And I had this massive experience where I was sort of shaking, and I released all of this trauma, right? I was in the sauna at the gym. I used to go in at 6 o'clock in the morning. There's nobody else in there. And I came out of the sauna and I was like, I don't know what just happened in there, but I must have meditated properly for the first time. I went back in the next day and tried to do it again. Didn't happen. Nothing. Nada. Yeah. So then I tried again and again. And then it happened again, accidentally, a little while after. Anyway, I was telling my friend, Pat Dively, a guy who's been doing breath work for quite a while. He's like, oh, that sounds like breath work. And I was like, what do you mean by that? And he was like, well, this breath work, you like. And I like, it's often when I tell people I do breath work now, I thought the same thing. Yeah. When I say to people, do you do breath work? They're like, oh yeah. And I'm like, what'd you do? And they're like, well, I can't, I breathe through my nose and out my mouth sometimes. And I was like, and he was like, no, try this. So he sent me a link. And then the rest is history, really. Like, I sat down and I was like, right, let's give this a bash. And then I was like, doing it. And then I had another massive experience, and I knew straight away, this is a game changer, this is a game changer. I need to do something with this. And then I very quickly trained, and then was like, I need to show this to people. So yeah, it's become a massive, massive part of what I do now. Yeah, but funny how it starts, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and I think it's who you hear it from. And so I'm thinking about you delivering this message of breath work with You've got your tats and the beard and this biker look, but this teddy bear heart. And you're sharing that this will help. And I think it's your it you just come across so genuine, and I think and so relatable. And so there's like a trust factor that happens. And so people are like, I don't know what he's talking about, but I'll try it.
Yeah, I actually experienced some kickback in the sort of breathwork community because of the way that I talk. And so, like, I would say things like, come and get high on your own supply, right? And like, I use terminology that I might have used back when I was in my early 20s and drinking. We used to say, we're going to go and get off our nut. I don't know if you'd have that term where you're from, right? But in England, we say, oh, you're going to get off our nut tonight. So I say to people, come and try this. It's mad. You do it, you're going to get off your nut. It's going to be crazy. Trust me, try it, right? And I had some kickback from the sort of breathwork community. I'll be real with you, in a bit of a passive way. Somebody did a post about things that you shouldn't say when you're delivering breathwork, and it was like all of the stuff that I was saying, and it was all, I was sort of, what I was doing was growing quickly on Instagram, and somebody posted it, and I saw it, and I sort of, I'm sure they would argue it wasn't about me, but I knew, I was like, well, that's everything that I do. Yeah. But then I find it interesting because the same people that are saying that will also say, I just want to make breathwork accessible to everybody. Now, I love the other stuff. Yeah. I love the, like, people saying, let's transcend consciousness and let's get in touch with our ancestors, and I don't know, wear a robe and plait our hair. I've done all that. I love all of that, right? And I wouldn't have gone near it 10 years ago. However, if somebody said to me, try this, you'll get off your nut, right? And like in my playful, excitable way, which is the true way of how I'd want to talk about breathwork anyway, that's my authentic self. Come and try it. Like, it's honestly, it's good. You're gonna love it. If you like, seriously, you'll have an experience. Then I might have tried, and that's why I think a lot of people that probably wouldn't try breathwork do come and try breathwork. And then I always say to everybody that does my breathwork, go and try everyone else's now. Now that you've tried it, now you've had the experience, go and do that stuff. Go and do the other, because there's so many amazing people doing amazing things out there with breathwork. The power really is in the breath. We've already talked about it. Do the breathing pattern. You're going to have an experience. What I say through it might help. My technique, the way that I hold space, is going to be, how I do it. I've experienced your breathwork, Josh, and it's amazing. It's different to what I do, but it's amazing and I love it. Go and try everybody's, but let's give these people an in. Let's give these people an in to try it and then go and experience it, And I want people, I used to hang around with different people to what I am now, but good guys, man, just lost, And I want them to find this stuff. I want them to find this stuff, not just people that are already in the space, not just people that are already in the healing space. This stuff is, and it's, we're just breathing, man. That's the, like, it's mad. We're just breathing. And I know it's sacred. And I know it's deep work, but I do think that some people still want to just gatekeep it. Because I'm like, there's a pub and a bar on every street corner, right? We all know the risks of alcohol, but we still don't mind that people go in there and drink themselves out of their minds. But then we want to say, don't try breath work unless you've done loads of loads. You shouldn't be doing it on your own unless you've done loads of training. And I'm wary of people that say that, because I'm like, if you're going out drinking on the weekends, some of these people are out drinking on the weekends, sharing drugs with their mates, right? And then want to say it's wrong to let people try breathwork on their own. It's gatekeeping. I really believe that. And that's why I'm more like, let's let everybody have it. Let's give people a bit of personal responsibility, Let's let them know the dangers or the risks or what could happen. And then let people make their own decision,
I think that's so beautiful because even so, the way Josh and I were trained, like in the end of the training, when they were talking about how you can create your own community and whatnot, it's like, do it your way, like, because It's the energetics of you and your flavor and your technique that's gonna get your clients. And so same thing, like someone, if you're at least just a starting point for someone, then they find something else and fantastic. But like it's I think that's so wonderful to have like your own flavor. That's it's beautiful because it will draw in people. People feel that authenticity and that truth. And that's what people are drawn to, even if they're not aware of it. So yeah. And everyone's different. I just love that. I love having totally different, like even when we were in our practicum, we're practicing on each other and in our certification, like everybody in it, even as they're starting, like they're just, you're kind of seeing them try out their own little ways of doing things. And that was so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Do you find it harder as breathwork facilitators yourself to, at the beginning of someone's breathwork session, to not be like, have your facilitator head on, like, oh, that was good. I like the way they said that. And then you're like, no, just breathe. Let them say it. Stop thinking, I'm gonna drop that line in when I breathe. That was a good line. You know what I mean? It's hard to switch
I do. Yeah, I
that
have a
off,
hard time dropping in because I'm like, oh, yeah, I could try that way.
isn't it?
Or even I get a little intimidating breathing other breathwork facilitators. Like, oh, I hope that they go deep. Like, I want this to be good for them too.
Oh yeah, I know all about looking after the facilitator. I hope they have a good session, or I have to, if I don't go there and I don't have a deep one, I have to at least look like I have when I woke up so that I can make them feel like it's a good show. Hey, I do that. But it's interesting. It's interesting, right? Because I've got like a, not just bought, I've had it a little while now, but I've got the sauna tent in my back garden.
Oh, cool.
So I do, I'm back doing my breathe. I love the heat. I know everyone's talking about the cold at the moment, and they, I've got an ice bath as well. So I what I do regularly at the moment is I breathe in the sauna, in like the steam sauna. It's like a sauna tent. And then when the heat, I'm about 20 minutes of breathing, and then I get out and get it into my ice bath. So you go hot and then really cold, and then it's
Wow.
like just brings me so back to life and into my body. It's, I love it. I love it. Anything to bring me in my body, you know, that's what makes me feel alive now. Because I realize that my struggle has been when I don't feel safe in my body, right? Because the world feels too much. I've learned to leave it. I've learned to jump up in my head and leave my body. And so these, any somatic practice, anything that brings me back into my body, and sometimes I need a bit of a shock because I go into like shutdown state. That's my state, you know. Everyone talks about the fight or flight. I thrive a little bit in the fight or flight, I feel like. But when I shut down, it's dangerous for me, you know, like because I'd start trying to fit, I'm looking for a way to feel something, you know. So these, like, the saunas and the breath work and the ice baths and the tapping and all of that stuff, sports and exercise, right? It's a brilliant way of bringing you back into your body. I've done that before, been jogging on the treadmill at the gym, and you're 40 minutes in and I'm crying because I've come into my body, you know, I've just got lost and I'm in my body and I'm, oh my God, I'm crying at the gym. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
Was just telling Josh that I'm back trying to do yoga because I'm very, my element is like space and air, and I'm always, it's the same thing. Like I can leave the present moment so easily. And so it can be really hard to like ground in. So I know for myself, getting movement and that sort of thing helps me. So I've been doing a lot of yoga lately because you forget, like I'm human. I forget that those certain things really bring me back in my body and how important it is, even when we don't like think we need it that day. So I have to, it's that discipline. It's like taking full ownership.
And it has to become a bit of a discipline, right? Because when I shut down, the worst thing about being shut down is I don't really know I'm shut down.
Same.
But the people around me do. You know, the people that love me start to worry. You're not here. What's going on? Are you okay? Why are you like this? And then I get defensive. Well, I'm fine. Like, what do you mean? Like, stop getting on at me. Just leave me alone. And then it's like, oh, hang on, hang on. I've gone, you know. And I, because I don't remember stuff. People will say, we talked about this yesterday. And I'm like, I weren't there yesterday. I couldn't even tell you where I was yesterday. And it's not that I've forgotten, it's that I wasn't there. I was up here, away from my body, just getting through, So I have to snap back in all the time. Regular. That's why morning routines have been so vital for me,
Yeah. The morning routines have been hard this winter. I'm getting back into it. Like we've had a few warm days recently, and all of a sudden I'm like cooking again and I'm doing my morning routines the last couple of days, and I'm like, all right, we're back. We're coming out of hibernation.
But even the morning routines can even for me just be something that feels safe. So even if that is like, I don't know, like it doesn't have to be getting up and journaling and doing breath work and then going for a run. It could be giving myself 5 minutes where I stand my pillow up and I just sit in my bed and let myself come round a moment. Like if that's what it is, that's what it is. But it's like creating space in my life where I fall into a space of safety, and if I can make that regular, then okay, I'm safe here. This is safe, I need that. I need that regular.
It's like however long it takes to remember that inside of you.
Yeah, so true.
And sometimes it's a minute. And sometimes it takes an hour.
Yeah, or longer. I mean,
Longer.
I was talking to Nick, who I know you've had on recently, and we were talking about how I still have the ability to like turn up at a car crash and be like, oh my God, what happened here? And then be like, oh, this was me. Like, I caused this crash. Like, I was driving the car. Like, how did I get here? And be like, how did I get here? How did I get here? I still have the ability to do that. And then because I've turned up at a car crash, that's shocked me back into my body. And then I wake up and it's like, oh my God, I've been causing destruction for the last 2 or 3 days in my personal relationships because I've been so away from my body. And I think, by the way, I think particularly men, but I'd assume it's, like that for all the genders, but I think particularly men, I think we lose a lot of men that because they disassociate, they go into that shutdown state. They don't know what's going on. They go out and ruin their life trying to feel something, trying to find something. And then they wake up and the car crash has happened and it's like, shit, what have I done? And then they can't undo what they've done. And so we lose a lot of them. I really think that I do.
I agree. Yeah, when I had a class locally last year. It was like every week, and I did have a few men starting to come. And so back to your point about how there are some like wacky people. I had this woman who was owning the class. She'd be like, there's some men going to be in this class. Like, are you okay with it? I'm like, yes. Like, breath work is so important for men specifically because they don't have to identify what it is they're letting go. They can just come and release and not have to talk about it if they don't feel like it, and just to have that reminder to feel safe in their body.
Yeah,
So,
so important. Yeah.
so Josh, can you? I'd love to hear your experience. I know you have your online program, you have your breathing space, you have your in-person events. All of these have community. Can you touch on what community has meant to you?
I think the act of being witnessed or the act of witnessing is fundamental to any healing journey. And I think, particularly, by the way, being witnessed by your peers. Like if I think of my own journey and then I think of all of the people that I've interacted with that have had a huge change in their life, right? That something sparked a massive change in their life. I'm sorry to the professionals here, but very rarely do I hear them say, it was in a therapy session and this happened, right? Or I went to see my doctor and this happened. It's normally like I was with this person and they shared something about themselves and I saw everything about me so clearly. And so I think finding trusted circles, I think that most of us need, in an ideal world, a few different spaces. So, for example, I need a space that's for men, a men-only space has become really vital to me, particularly because my dad was an alcoholic. So the relationship that I had with men, I really struggled. I only knew how to say, if somebody wants to fight, I'll fight them for you. I didn't know how to love a man and let a man love me. I just didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how to be emotionally intimate with men. And it's, I run a men's event once a month, and it's probably still something that I'm working on. And all the different types of men that exist, that's been really important to me in a men's space, to be able to lean into all the different parts of myself that exist. So that's been important. It's been important for me as somebody who has had real addiction struggles to be in a space with other people that have had real addiction struggles specifically, so that I can be seen in that regard. Because when I see somebody else explain my experience, a piece of my loneliness disappears, yeah? And it's normally when I hear somebody else explain their experience rather than me explain my own. So it just, I think that trauma wounds happen in relationships. I don't think emotional wounds happen without relationships. Like, my emotional wounding is about how the people that should have loved and kept me safe, how they've showed up to me. So my trauma plays out in my relationships, and so community is vital. So I'm wary of doing a lot of healing work on my own, because when I'm on my own, I don't feel like I need to do any healing work. Yeah. I mean, I think I said at the beginning of this that I'm an introvert, yeah, that I'm introverted. That's true, but I'm also somebody who really likes being on my own, because I really don't have to do any work on myself, because I've only got to keep myself happy and I'm all right with who I am. But the moment you throw me in a space with somebody else, I automatically want them to like me, so I'm going to change myself now. And then, if I'm really seeking attachment from them, as in I love them or I want them to love me, then all my shit comes out. So I can't heal on my own anyway. I need to do it with other people. So that's why it's so vital for me, community. I think community is the essence. Community is the essence of recovery. It has to be done in communities for me. That's my belief.
Well, it struck me that what you needed as a 9-year-old was somebody to normalize your experience, to name it, to label it. And that confusion inside of you was because nobody said, "This is the shit show here," And so now you're having that happen in community. Whether they're sharing their experience and you're like, "Oh, that's what happened with me." It's like the awareness is sparked through other people's words. We feel like we're understood, we're known. And so a lot of what I've been, so as I've been on this healing journey, I've been reflecting on, we also, so that's important to do the healing work. And we also need to discover, what did we need as kids so that we can employ that to our kids so that they don't have to go on the healing journey too. So it feels like this two-pronged approach, my work, but also what are we going to give society so that people have to heal less? And so uncovering or discovering that we needed as children somebody to normalize, to speak to our situation, and to, like both of you were sharing, that what we're intuitively feeling makes sense. That's real. Trust your body, trust yourself. So I'm starting to make this list of what did I need, and then how do I give it to my kids? And with the understanding that nobody taught me how, they told me how to not do it or to do it incorrectly in lots of ways. And then, so now I'm in relationship. I'm trying it out. I'm like throwing spaghetti against the wall. It's like, does this work? Nope. That made it worse. Okay, let me try this. How about this one? And it's like, ooh, that kind of worked. And so it's this crazy practicing being human.
Like it's almost like growing up, isn't it? Like growing up, because I guess when we were younger, we had to become. We had no choice but to become because of our experiences. And so in adulthood, it's like, and I think it was, do you know John Bradshaw? He's not around anymore, but he's like probably my hero, one of my heroes. He was like a bit like what you were just saying, Josh, like find out what was missing when you were younger and go and do it. If you feel like you grew up in an environment where your parents didn't touch you and cuddle you enough, then go and get a massage. Go and see if that works. Go and find something where somebody lays their hands on you, right? And you get to feel that, and you get to feel somebody caress and touch your body. Like if you lacked play, go and play. Find what that is and play. Do you know what I mean? If you lacked being around other people during enjoyment, then find ways to do that. And it's amazing the healing that can come with that. Do you know what I mean? The healing that can really come. I realized that I lacked a lot of that, you know. I lacked a lot of that, the kind of resting in relation with other people. So I think, I can't remember if it was before we started recording or when we were recording, but I talked about going to the spa with my wife because, like, I'm not used to, I didn't have that when I was younger, like, safe, calm, sit in silence and just enjoy company together. That didn't happen when I was younger. It was like chaos. So if I'm not careful, I just keep seeking that. Let's go and do something crazy, because I'm comfortable there. Do you know what I mean? Actually, no, let's come, let's relax. Let's give ourselves something different, you know? So yeah, I love that. I love what you said. Yeah.
It's like finding the antidote.
Yeah, fine. It's like, again, bringing it back to the two things that you said, it's like finding the truth of what you need and then using that to love yourself, right? Truth and love, you know? And it's all within us, right? It's all within us. If you look at any like spiritual literature, be that religion or spiritual or any kind, over the history of beginning of the time from the pieces that we have, most of them say things like the truth will set you free, you know? Most of them say things like, God is within you, I am within you, all of those things. For me, what they're all trying to say is like, you have everything you need. You have it all. It's there. You just need to discover it in yourself. And I think, look, society and the systems that we've created are built around marketing and making you believe that in and of yourself, you're not enough, right? So it's stacked, the cards are stacked against you in life. Because everything tells you, at the age of 5 years old, as a child, you're sent to a big, massive building with loads of other kids where all of the adults there tell you, you will be of no use to this world unless you work really, really hard for the next 10 years to learn what we're going to teach you. Nothing else but what we're going to teach you. And if you fail, I mean, your life could be really bad. You're told that at 5 years old for the next 10 years of your life. When you look at it like that, it's like no wonder we're maladjusted to life. Yeah. Like, no wonder we're all lost. No wonder I go into corporate companies and try and help them learn about self-love and how do you love yourself and how do you self-care and all of that. Because we were all taught when we were younger, in and of yourself, you're nothing, you're worthless. When the opposite is true, your value exists because you exist. Yeah. Like, a child's value when they're born is in them. Like when my children were born, they didn't come out of the womb and I thought, hopefully you can become somebody so then I can love you. I thought, I love you with every single fiber of yours and my being. I love you. Your value exists because you exist, regardless, not dependent on what you do for the world. You know? Maybe we should be in charge of the world, us free. Let's go and yes.
Well, sorry, while you're saying that, like I think all the time about how like Kids, especially, there's so many kids with ADHD and whatnot. It's like, no, you have to sit in this one desk for 8 hours today, and if you get up, then you're misbehaving. It's like these kids just want to play and explore, and it's like, nope, read this book. Like, there's so many things I wish I could like go back and be more like interested in. Like, I remember hating history as a kid, but like now I'm like, oh, I wish I could like take that history class again or whatever it is. It's like, why was it so? It's just like, I believe in structure, but like just for some kids, it's not one size fits all.
And the world's changed, right? School was created in the Industrial Revolution, right? So
Right.
we were trying to breed children that could go and work in a factory, right?
Right.
And like the world is changing so fast now. Most kids that are just starting high school will leave school for a job that doesn't even exist yet.
Right.
So we don't know what we can teach them. Because we don't know, like they're going to do something that we don't even know about. That's how
Wow.
fast the world's moving at the moment. But and I'll say this, I do work with lots of corporate companies, right? If I go into a startup company and I say to the leader of that business, if you're getting somebody fresh out of high school just coming into work, what attributes would you be looking for in them? Now, most of them, there's obviously different, doctors and stuff like that are different, but a lot of these companies now that are like tech and all that, they're going to say to me, I want somebody who's great at grabbing attention and thinking outside of the box. Yeah. They need to be disruptive. Yeah. I want them to ask hard, difficult questions. Yeah. And I want them to be, ready to go. Those four things will still get you kicked out of most classrooms. Asking stupid questions. Yeah. Like being an attention seeker, good at getting attention, being disruptive. Like, but they are the very things that you need for success in a lot of the world today. So, like, I have a lot of sympathy for teachers and schools and stuff because it's a hard gig. But I do think that we need to change some things, because like if you said to me now, you got to sit at a desk for the rest of the day, I'd just say no, I'm not going to do it. And if you tried to force me to do it, I would play up. Like I would not have it. I would cause you, if you shut the door and said you've got to sit there now, right, for the rest of the day, I would be your worst nightmare because I wouldn't want to sit there.
Or I would at least say, like, can you teach me how to do my taxes and run a business? Like,
Yeah.
can I insist upon what you're going to teach me? Or no, we have to learn about like the printing press or like something so random that's not going to help you in life. Like,
Well, see, then you'll set me off on a conversation about how I think it's like that by design.
agree.
People in power don't want to create empowered, powerful young people. They want to create employable people who do as they're told and are easy to control. Now that might make me sound like a conspiracy theorist, but I grew up in a family where I saw the way the system was working, and when I called it out, everybody said I was the crazy one. And I think that society is the same dysfunctional system as most dysfunctional family environments, which is it's led by those in power who make those who are not in power argue amongst themselves, the siblings argue amongst themselves, right? While they all ignore the clear dysfunction that's actually going on. And if you call it out, you're the black sheep of the family. It's the same in society. If you call it out, if you go, hang on a minute, this ain't right. You're the black sheep, and most people would think, I don't want to admit I'm part of an abusive system, so stop showing me that I am, because it makes me feel uncomfortable. So I'm going to shut you up rather than seeing the truth. And I
Right.
think that's society, man. I do think that.
I agree. I agree. And then, like, the pattern, it's just patterns on a greater scale that we experience in the home,
Exactly.
in life. I saw something recently that I really resonated with because I too have been called a conspiracy theorist many times. I saw something, conspiracy realist. Like, that's what I am, conspiracy realist, not a theorist.
And like a lot of the things that people believe to be truth are things that are fed to us by people who are repeatedly outed as liars. And we're like, and then people are like, yeah, but they can't be lying about this one as well. I'm like, no, like history tells us that all they do is lie to us so that they can keep their power, right?
Right.
And yet we're going to continue to Believe it and let it happen. It, like, and by the way, I think the world is more like that than it's ever been. However, I don't know if you noticed, but this year is like the one of the biggest changes of the guard across the world for many, many years. So it's there's so many elections in so many different countries that are falling at the same time. That by the end of the year, we could have gone even further one way, or things might take a massive shift towards the other way. That's not taken into account that probably nowadays there isn't different sides. They're all sort of as toxic as each other in many ways, but there could be like a massive change of the guard, which will be interesting from a sort of like people watching perspective. Which is what, I've had to try and just become a people watcher because in times gone by, I get too caught up in it. I see that stuff and then it ruins my life because I'm like, I can't, it's too much for me. And I think I'm in an abusive system and nobody's listening to me. And I still get, you know what I mean? One of the things that triggers me more than anything in my life today is when people that I respect and love that seem to be rational, and open in every respect of their life, but can't see a glaringly obvious form of abuse that's happening right in front of them and want to make me out like I'm a conspiracy theorist for even asking the question.
I know. It's like, we can't like discuss anymore. Like people have, because it comes back to safety. And if people don't feel safe, it's and that agreeable, disagreeable that we've been programmed. Like I feel I'm guilty of it too. Like I'm afraid to disagree with people, but why can't we just have a safe conversations and discussions where we do disagree?
And it used to be like, even like 20 years ago, right? Which isn't that long ago. I feel like we all used to have groups of people where you'd be like, oh, that's Dave, he's like got some really weird views, but he is funny. I mean, listen, I don't agree with him, and like I don't subscribe to a lot of the things that he thinks, but
But we love Dave.
he's a character, he's fun. And I'm going to be his friend. It's sort of like in today's world, it's like as soon as anybody says anything that we disagree, then you're guilty by association. Like I always like I've had it with a few people in like the public eye where somebody says, "Oh, do you like this person?" And I go, "Oh yeah, I quite like them." And they go, "Yeah, but didn't they cheat on their wife like 10 years ago?" I'm like, "Well, yeah, I think I mean I don't like that bit, but like on the whole, I think they're kind of funny." Yeah, wow. Like I can't believe you
Then,
could stay when they did that. And I'm like, well,
yeah. Then you agree with you think cheating's okay, and then it's like all
yeah,
the turned
exactly.
on
And
you, and oh, it's awful.
that's why even with the work that I do, I get a lot of plaudits for what I do, and I sometimes like want to be like, let's just remember, we're all the same, man. We're all the same. Like I might have a bit of a communication gift, maybe, and even that makes me feel awkward to, but we're all the same. We're like I'm a messy, complex, deeply flawed human being, regardless of what work I get to do in my life. I ain't no different to anybody else. And that's one of the things that make I get quite uncomfortable sometimes, like when I'm at events and stuff, because I worry that people have seen me online and think that I'm gonna be like I don't know, like deep and like full of wisdom. And I'm not, I'm like want to blend into the corner and like not really be seen when I'm in social situations. You know what I mean? So it's a funny old life. It's a funny old life for sure.
So Josh, I want we've been talking about how the condor and the eagle. Do you want to talk about that? Because that could be the change of the guards that we are hoping for. Like this change of so we've been talking about this prophecy that the eagle, when the eagle and the condor fly together, there will be peace. And so the eagle represents masculinity and structure, and like, so that's what we've been living in right now. And the condor is feminine energy, creativity, more flow. And it's not about switching to from one to the other, but it's about them coming together and a balance of both energies. So, and it was, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the it was like a 500-year prophecy that they'll eventually fly together, and we're like right on that cusp of that happening. So it's interesting that you said that about the how this is a year for change, because who knows, maybe it will finally have we will finally have some peace. Because that's what I agree with, like it's not about like we need to completely change everything. We just need to come together and in unison and agree to disagree, but also have more, who knows? I don't know, who knows if I even know what I'm talking about, but
No, I do know what you're talking about, and I think a lot of it is just because we live in so much dysfunction, right? And at the helm at the moment is that, you know, the leaders are probably more narcissistic than they've been for a long time collectively, right? And I mean, when I mean collectively, I mean like some of the bigger powers in the world. I think they're just more narcissistic than they have been for a long time. And so when the leaders, those in power, are the ones that call the rules, are narcissistic, then it creates dysfunction, you know? And it will change in the end. And then it'll probably do what it always does, which is go too far the other way, you know? When I look at like, and you know, I exist in the, in England, so it's probably slightly different society to yours, but we've had the party that's been in of being in power now for like 13 years. And I think that when that they like, they're just too addicted to the power that they've lost sight. I'm sure there's many, many good people in there, but they're just too addicted to the power now, which, by the way, I think is almost unavoidable for human beings. I think it's unavoidable, you know? And so I think you need to switch. And then, you know, I think that'll probably happen in the country that I live in. And then the other people will come in and we'll swing back over the other way. And, you know, a lot of people will be happy and it'll change and everybody will change as a result. And then they'll probably get too addicted to the power in the end. And then we'll need to change again, you know, because one thing I know, one thing I've learned, and I'm an addict, yeah, so I get addicted to everything. If you can get addicted to it, I'll get addicted. Even if you can't, I'll get addicted to it. I'm addicted to everything that I do that makes me feel good, yeah. Like, it's really hard, man, as I've gained a following and a platform that comes with power, right? And that is like so addictive in so many different ways. Even from like a really obvious personal example is when I worked in a factory and had an argument with my wife, I'd go to work thinking, I need to get this sorted. Like when I get home, we're gonna, yeah. Like I've had to learn over the years of doing this stuff now. When I have an argument with my wife, sometimes the next thing I do is go and stand on a stage, do a talk, and then have hundreds of people tell me how amazing it is and how glad they are to meet me, right? And all of a sudden, I'm going home thinking, I don't need your love, right? Do you know who I am? Do you know what I've just done? And how many people or lives have been changed by me? Like I have to be careful of that, you know, because it's addictive. It's like, if I feel not very good about myself, I could do an Instagram post. And listen, I just because I don't do a picture with my top off and washboard abs, because I haven't got that, but we all go, oh, there's some people who are just on social media showing off their washboard abs, yeah, for likes. You best believe sometimes I put posts on social media because I feel not very good about myself and I know people are like it. So I have to, that's addictive, you know? Power and being somebody who's like addictive. It's hard not to like get carried away with that, you know? And so if when people are running the country and or whatever country it is or in a position of power, it's so hard to, you know, it becomes even harder to keep yourself accountable. There's a boxer, I forget which boxer said it, but this analogy, trust me, it suits fits what I'm saying, says it's much harder to train for a big fight in silk slippers and pajamas. Yeah, because at the beginning, when I'm fighting for my life to earn money to put food on the table, it's one thing. But once I've got the silk slippers on, everything changes. I change who I am. It's harder to keep myself accountable because I go home to silk. I don't go home to silk slippers and pajamas. But you understand what I'm saying? You understand what I'm saying, right?
So
It's beautiful awareness, though. Like, can you imagine if people in power were able to say, hey, I need to take a few breaths and check myself?
yeah, they probably wouldn't be in power, innit? That's like, do you mean? So yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know, and maybe I should get off of my soapbox and stop talking with the belief that I know the best way to run the country. How did I get
No,
there? There's
there's
irony
probably
in that, in what I've said.
So I was watching some of these Netflix shows where the dystopian, the civilization disappears and there's just a handful of people. And then however they are inside is how that civilization is going to grow. And so it struck me, I was like, okay, if I was like the only human, or me and another woman or something, we're the only humans left. What's inside of me is now going to multiply and grow. And that's true for leaders too, that if they're not aware, they don't have that self-awareness, it is just showing up all over the place. That's what's inside them is now everywhere outside. And so I thought about this. I was like, what would a civilization look like if I was the first seed that got, planted? I was afraid of the I didn't want to know the answer, because then it's like magnified. And
Well, it's kind of like what Josh said already about how, like, it's just the pattern of like our family dynamic and on a greater scale.
And it's why shadow work's so difficult, right? Because when you were saying that, you started off when you said dystopia and there's only a few people left on the planet, I was like, oh, that sounds lovely. But then when you were like, the civilization will grow based on what's inside of you, and then you imagine what it was like if I was the seed being planted, then I started panicking, thinking, oh my God, like, I'm trying to, what world would I create? And then, like,
Lord of
oh my
the
God, yeah, you're
Flies.
like, oh no, that's not good.
Well, it's funny because they replicate the same behaviors that destroyed civilization. Like, that's the thinking, that it's like, well, no, we do it this way, where we punish and we put people in jail or we kill them. And it's like, no, that's what created the nuclear bomb that blew up the whole world. That's the whole premise of why you guys are now here by yourself. Too different.
Yeah.
We're really just ants.
Yeah. That's true. When you zoom out, that's really what we are, by the way.
So, Josh, what we'd love to hear where people can find you and what you have that you're excited for in this upcoming year.
So, look, the best place to go is my website, joshconnolly.co.uk, or I'm Josh underscore FFW on the socials. When's this going out? When are we going live with this podcast?
This will be probably a month.
A month from now? Okay, well then you can pre-order my book,
Sweet.
which is called "Is Them Not You," and you can find that on my website. And that is a process to help you heal from toxic or dysfunctional upbringings. It's full of breath work. It's based on my Inner You program. So it's that and more. There's QR codes in every chapter that takes you to a breath work as part of the book. And so yeah, I'd love for you to pre-order that. I run my Inner You program. So the next one is the 8th of April. You may be hearing this in time to sign up to that, but if you've missed that one, there'll be more. And then I have my online community, which is Breathing Space, where we do regular things every week. I deliver sessions. I've got one in 5 minutes that I'm delivering today, and we get expert facilitators in as well. And you can download an app, and it's all on your phone. So that feels amazing, by the way. This is the first podcast that I've announced that book on. It won't be probably the first time it's heard about by the time this goes out, but this is the first time that I've done it, so that's
That's
amazing.
so
Thank you.
exciting. I'm really excited.
Awesome.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
Thank
congrats. That's
you.
really great. It sounds really cool. I love like an interactive with the QR codes and everything.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm very excited. So yeah.
Well, thank you. We'll give you enough time to get onto your next call, but thank you so much. It's been such an honor.
Thank you. Yeah. We'll have to do round two. I feel like we could have gone on for another 3 hours. I feel like there's lots more to do. So maybe we'll do that sometime. Yeah.
That'd be
We
great.
love that. We love that.
What a great episode. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Let us know what you took from that. Leave some comments, share with a friend who also might resonate with the story. Subscribe, like, all those things so that we can spread the word about our podcast. And so all of our beautiful stories that we get to hear from our amazing guests get to be shared around the world. We appreciate you as a listener, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Deeper Awareness Podcast, where the journey of self-discovery and inner growth continues to unfold. We hope this episode has ignited a spark within you and inspired you to embrace a more conscious and authentic existence by looking within. If you enjoyed today's conversation, be sure to subscribe and stay tuned for upcoming episodes, where we'll continue to explore the transformative power of breathwork and emotional healing. Continue the conversation and stay connected with us on Instagram. Follow at Deeper Awareness Podcast to receive daily inspiration, valuable tips, and updates on our latest episodes and offerings. We'd love to hear your thoughts and insights from today's show, so feel free to share them in the comments below or tag us in your posts. Your engagement and feedback mean the world to us as we strive to continue to create content that resonates and empowers our incredible community. Together, we can continue exploring the depths of consciousness, fostering genuine connections, and supporting each other on our transformative journeys. This episode is brought to you by You Belong Breathwork, your destination for transformative healing and self-discovery. At You Belong Breathwork, we believe in the power of breath to unlock the deepest parts of ourselves, leading to profound insights and a greater sense of connection and belonging. Whether you're seeking emotional healing, a deeper connection with yourself, or a path to authenticity, our breathwork sessions, retreats, and coaching programs are designed to guide you on this transformative journey. Our experienced facilitators are here to hold space for you as you explore the depths of your consciousness and discover the infinite potential within. Visit youbelongbreathwork.com to explore our offerings and download a free guided breathwork session. Thank you for being a part of our deeper awareness community. Stay connected, stay curious, and may you embrace your true essence with love and compassion. Goodbye for now, and see you in the next episode.